are listening to the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast, the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Here's your host, Tyus France.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for tuning into the Battle Born Libertarian Podcast. Yes, this is the official podcast of the Libertarian Party of Nevada. So if you are in this state, please get involved with our party. And if you are outside of the state, well, you get to listen to what is happening in one of the freest states in the country. And with that being said, sitting across from me is really the authority the guy I turn to when it comes to anything political. And that is Alex. Thank you so much for being here, Alex.
Thanks for having me, as always, Tyus. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're the best. So we're every podcast we seem to be doing a different technological approach. This time we're doing something called round tripping. So we're not in the same room today, which means the video might be different, the audio might be different. Bear with us, guys. We're working to find the best solution, not only to make the quality of the podcast's audio and content great, but to make it regular and consistent as possible. And this is one of the ways we're working on that. So today, I think we should probably follow up on last week's podcast where we were talking about the government being shut down. And I guess there's good news for some and bad news for others in finding out that, that's over. It's the government is now back up and running. So if you are an anarchist like myself, you know, not that great. If you are a minarchist, totally cool. I think, at least from my perspective, and I'll throw it over to you, Alex, in a second, but from my perspective, I think the big lesson of this was the government shut down and we still kept our roads. So there's a big surprise. And nothing really seemed to change. I think one of the other things that was interesting was they said that there's 80,000 jobs that were put on, what do they call it, furlough? Something like that?
Put
on hold. And there's, you know, the 800,000 non-essential jobs, to which I think, why do we have 800,000 jobs that are non-essential that could be turned off at a moment's notice? But apparently everything's back up to normal again. What was your takeaways from the big government shutdown?
Well, I know a lot of libertarians like to celebrate, but because of the way they do funding after the fact, my takeaway is that we just basically gave an extra few days of vacation to these already 15-20% overpaid government officials. So, you know, in my mind, when the government shuts down, we're getting less money or less bang for our buck, you know? And so for me, I don't want the government to shut down. I just want it to be less people overall.
That's a good point.
You know, I kind of agree with your point, though, about, like, we have all these people that are deemed not essential when there's no money, and in reality, we have no money now. We're borrowing. You know, one of the reasons that the government shut down, didn't actually shut down, but nearly shut down last year, was because of the whole debt ceiling. We're spending money we don't have on things we don't need, really.
Yeah, now, on the topic of the finances of this, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but does it end up actually costing us more in the long run to do these government shutdowns? Because they seem to happen, you know, once a presidential term is what it seems to be in the rhythm of at this point.
Well, I don't know for sure. I suspect it costs us the same amount, but we get less work done because instead of them going to work, we basically, although we don't pay them while they're sitting at home, Congress usually passes a bill that retroactively pays them. It definitely does that for the military. So we've got non-essential military personnel sitting at home, and then we pay them anyway. And so it's like, really?
Yeah. So efficiency-wise, it's way worse then. Because if they're going to get paid regardless, so let's say you took off 6 months of work. Obviously, it wasn't 6 months, but just for the sake of extremists. If we took off 6 months of work and then got paid retroactively for those 6 months, we're still having to play catch up. So it's super wasteful in that regard.
Exactly. And, you know, they always try to hit you where they think it'll hurt, you know, national parks, you know, NASA, things like that, that, you know, they know that the public generally is favorable to. I guess it's a good bully tactic, right? If the city government wants to raise taxes, they don't close the roads. They close parks and they close recreation centers and senior centers and things that, that people enjoy, right? They shut down the circus. No more games. No more gladiatorial fights until the taxes have been raised. And and so in this way, you kind of get the public on the take. Now, that's not to say I'm anti-park, obviously, but you know, in my mind, they use that. They use police, fire, and children often also to be bartering chips for increased taxes, even if that's not where the money ends up going. Obviously, we all know how the margins tax worked out for Nevada businesses, where they're paying 2% on gross revenues. There's a reason that Smith's grocery stores aren't open 24 hours anymore. It's because
they can't
afford it. Well, okay, that I don't know that that's the reason why, but I do know that that was a that they cut costs by doing that, and so there's people who lost jobs or had reduced hours as a result, and one of the reasons is I believe because of this margins tax that was passed. Because grocery stores have a 0.5% profit margin usually. So a 2% revenue means they're losing money unless they raise prices. And speaking of that, I think one of the things you wanted us to bring up was the whole protectionist thing with Donald Trump and this solar tariffs thing. And I heard it might be extended to washing machines. Do you know anything more about that?
I do not know. I haven't heard anything about the washing machine part of this. What did you hear?
Yeah, so I just saw the news earlier, and I saw that there was a not only was there a 30% tariff placed on solar panels from overseas where they're primarily manufactured, costing something like 20,000 jobs, especially hard hit are areas like Nevada and Arizona where there's a lot of solar activity, and so. You know, it's just really important to the American economy for us to continue and this sort of thing. So it's just really important, Tyus, that we continue to support American businesses and jobs by keeping the import of raw materials and inputs of those jobs low. So apparently this has now been extended from solar panels to washing machines too. So LG announced that they would be increasing the price of their washing machines and dryers by $50 a piece. So the tariffs that seems like they're helping American businesses are actually hurting American consumers, and the jobs still aren't coming over here. They're not going to move their billion-dollar factory to the United States because of a tariff. They're just going to charge American consumers more. And that doesn't help American manufacturers, as was pointed out, because a lot of these tariffs are on inputs to building washing machines, period. So, you know, not just the final product, but all the little bits and pieces and electronics and chips and, you know, the barrels and this sort of thing and the semiconductors and all of this sort of thing, that's a lot of that is made overseas and then shipped to the United States for final assembly. Now there's a tariff on that. And so some financial analysts today were actually predicting that it's possible that these sorts of tariffs will erase entirely the so-called Trump tax cut, where American families are going to get a few hundred bucks to $1,000 back on their taxes this year. They might see that disappear with all of these tariffs that will increase the cost of things that they need. I mean, and we can agree that in today's world, washing machines are pretty, you know, those aren't just a luxury item anymore. That's an essential part of life for middle class America.
Yeah, well, you don't see anybody washing their clothes in a bucket anymore, and strangely, I don't see laundromats really around anymore because washing machines have become really cost effective. But if that's changing, things will go up in price. On the tax cuts. Have you seen these companies that are giving their employees extra money based off of these tax cuts? Have you noticed? I think Walmart ended up giving their employees money. I've heard that Amazon has done it as well. And I know there was a lot of people that were deeply concerned that this was just going to be a thing where the rich were going to get richer. And it's another example of, you know, people are as good as their own ethics. And a lot of these companies have I shouldn't say magnanimous. They've got very generous leadership that go, you know what, we've got an opportunity. We're going to be saving some money, and they passed it on to their people, which I think is really, really impressive.
It is, but I take a little bit of a less magnanimous view. If I'm a business and my taxes to the government have been slashed by 13%, I know my competitors might raise their wages to keep better workers. And in a cutthroat environment where you're always looking for a good worker, like these companies are, they don't want to lose out. Apple doesn't want to lose good employees to Microsoft, right? So they're going to increase wages and match the rest of the market to keep good people working for their company. So, So the ultimate result is better wages for people, and I think that that's a very great thing. But also, I believe that a lot of it has more to do with the labor market competition for good workers, because, again, there are I won't say limited, but there is a limited supply of good, qualified workers for these jobs. And they don't want to lose, especially banks, things like that. You know, I know people that will switch banking on the basis of a single customer service incident. And so it's really important for people who are in a service-based industry like banking to have the very best people working for them. Personally, I bank with USAA because I think that of all the banks I've ever dealt with, that they have the very best customer service. Not perfect, but the very best. And I know a lot of people would follow suit. And one reason that they have the best is they pay a little higher than, say, another bank. I don't know necessarily which ones, but I do know that they pay a little bit above average. And so you'll see better workers go there. Amazon does the same thing, right? In fact, I think in the past we've talked about the whole bring your dog to work and this sort of thing, where, you know, they want you to not only enjoy your wage, but they want you to enjoy your work all day too.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, I know I'd work harder if I had a smoothie machine.
You bring up a really, really good point. And I sometimes worry that people are going to look at this podcast and be like, man, this podcast is all about economics. To which I say, you're kind of right, because when it comes down to everything we talk about, It is dollars and cents, and that is what the government is being run off of. That's what these companies are being run off of. So having a strong foundation in economics is so important. And I looked at it, and I was saying the word magnanimous, like these people are just trying to do the right thing. But oftentimes the right thing is motivated not only by the ethics behind it, but off of the bottom line. And the free market system has shown over and over again to be one of the most ethical ways you can raise people up. So I think it was a really fantastic point. Let's dive into some regulation stuff, because I wanted to talk about regulations. I was looking, I'll tell you what actually started this whole thing. So I've got this really, really cool scale at my house. Besides weighing me, it tells me my body fat percentage and like lean muscle mass and all kinds of cool stuff. And I think yesterday or the day before, I got a message on my scale. Or when you update an app on your phone, how it tells you what the update does? Well, right, one of the things my scale does is it can tell me the health of my arteries, and it does that.
What?
It's a pretty cool thing. They call it pulse wave velocity. So it can tell how stiff my arteries are by how fast blood moves through my veins. How the scale figures this out, I don't know. But anyways, this is like one of the reasons I bought the scale. It was super advanced, really cool. You know, it can tweet my weight if I wanted that kind of nightmare in my life. And so they sent this update out that basically says, after routine review, we now believe that this feature may require different levels of regulatory approval. In light of this, we've decided to deactivate pulse wave velocity feature as of January 24th. So this is a feature that has worked. They're not saying it doesn't work. In fact, I don't think anybody's saying it doesn't work. It is built in. It's a mechanism that is there. And yet regulations are there either in place enough to shut them down or to scare them enough to physically disable a piece of information from this scale that I own. And I know there's other services out there, like, what's the one that does your DNA? 23andMe? Is that what it is? So I know those guys can index a lot more than what they tell you. They can tell you all kinds of diseases you might be more likely to have and not have, but they don't actually give out that information because they're afraid of the regulations that come with the medical industry. So anyways, based off of that, I was like, I need to talk a little bit about regulations and some of the reasons why regulations are not really all they're cracked up to be. So I wrote out a list of some arguments against regulations. Now, if you're not familiar with regulations, basically the motivation behind this is, hey, people should not be able to govern themselves because we can't trust people to govern themselves. So we're going to put little laws in place, little rules in place to protect people. So that's what you'd see with like the Food and Drug Administration. That's what they do, is they put these little rules in place. So one of the big concerns with this is it's a secret tax. This is a tax on top of anything that's regulated that you're paying for. You're paying for these agencies, you're paying for the processes and the loopholes and all the things that these companies have to jump through in order to abide by the regulations that these governments put in place, which means you're being taxed. I mean, I guess you could say it's tax, or you could say it's a price increase, whatever you want to call it. This ultimately makes things much more expensive. And to give like a idea of the economics of that, of how big that tax can be, a study done by the Journal of Economic Growth said that these regulations slow the U.S.'s economic growth by about 2% per year. So if you went back to like, yeah, it's a lot. If you went back to 1949, the regulations we had then, if we currently had those same regulations in effect, our GDP would be $38.8 trillion higher than what it is right now. That's the economic impact that regulations have on our economy. So it's a pretty massive thing there, right? On top of that, regulations, basically people go, well, we need these things in place to protect everybody, but really the only thing that it protects is large companies, because large companies have the bankroll to be able to afford it. And oftentimes you'll see these large companies rallying for regulations in their own industry. Let's say like the auto industry. When Tesla was coming out, these car manufacturers were rallying against it, not really rallying against Tesla, but rallying against all these different regulations for their cars. Oh, we want certain levels of energy efficiency. Why would Toyota pay money to have higher regulations for energy efficiency? The reason why is because other companies can't start up and compete with them, because they're big enough to be able to work within the regulations, but other companies just can't do it. So it really protects only the largest companies, which limits competition and ultimately super, super bad thing. Let's see. My next point on this is, obviously, this limits freedom. It limits freedom to create and to innovate, as illustrated by my scale, of course, that I'm coming back to because I'm super pissed that it doesn't work anymore. Additionally, regulations are super redundant. The free market is already self-regulating. As you were saying with jobs just a moment ago, people will adjust what they do for their employees based off of what the market demands. If people want more efficient vehicles, they'll buy more efficient vehicles. If people don't want them, they won't buy them. So these things are self-regulating. If medicine doesn't work, people won't buy it. Are you familiar with the homeopathy thing?
It's really sad, actually.
Yeah. So homeopathy has been basically allowed to self-regulate themselves. So they get put on the shelves right next to drugs, and everyone thinks that homeopathic remedies work, but they're really, there's nothing to them. They're essentially like water. And because the government regulates all these drugs, people assume that anything that's allowed to be right next to them is also a drug. But if a drug doesn't work, people should find that out and not buy the drug and let the market regulate it by itself. So, anyways, my scale lost a feature, and I found a great little photo. I guess I'll put it up with this post, of some salt that is 200 years old, but in New Jersey, this salt expires tomorrow. What? So, or next year rather. So, yeah, they're selling salt that is, it's sea salt that's more than 250 million years old. And it has an expiration date of January 20th, 2019. So, this is just a regulation that's put in place saying, well, you have to have an expiration date. Have you ever seen water bottles that have expiration dates? Water doesn't expire. So when water tastes stale, yeah, it's nitrogen getting into it. So anyways, that's my rant on regulations. Yeah. Alex, you got anything on regulations that I didn't cover?
I think one perspective I might bring up is that regulations ultimately, not only do they help rich corporations, but they hurt poorer people. One way is it creates protectionism in the markets here at home. Just like tariffs hurt domestic competitors from becoming better and better makers and builders and more efficient makers and builders, you have things here, right here at home in Las Vegas. Clark County, Nevada has banned Airbnb from operating in inside of its borders. The only exception, I believe, is City of Las Vegas. Basically, what they've done is they've said you have to have rentals that are at least 30 days or longer. And that's okay, but you can't do less than 30 days. And so for that, all that, that doesn't make all of Airbnb illegal, because you can get longer renters there. It basically, what it means is it means that that people who are looking to make a few extra bucks off their home, but maybe not have someone here all the time, maybe you're going to be gone for a few weeks and you'd like to rent out your rooms or something for a few days, instead of making some money on that, you have to leave it empty because Clark County knows better than you. And it was really sad. I was reading the argument for this on the Clark County website, and I guess they passed this regulation back in 1998, and I'm sure that it had to do with people competing in private homes with how exorbitant the hotels and fees were. But what's really sad is that this hurts the poor, and the reason it does is because poor and middle-class families just getting into a home might need to rent out an additional bedroom. And if you can't find long-term renters, short-term renters are just as good, right? In fact, you can even make that a little bit more profitable, depending upon how close you are to things tourists want to go to. So instead of helping middle-class families with a tough financial time being able to rent out their homes, Clark County has said, no, you can't do that because we can't trust consumers to know what they're getting into. If you rent for Airbnb, it's just like Uber in that you basically have a system of rating each other. So if you have a bed bug infested, nasty house that nobody wants to stay in, you get rated really poorly and they boot you off the service. On the other hand, if you have a clean, nice environment that people like to use and they like to rent in and they like to you were really close to the airport or something else that they wanted, they can rate you very highly, and then that'll make you more that'll make you more appealing to future customers. So their only real argument to this was, well, you don't have to follow the same regulations as the hotel, so it's not fair. And to that I say, then deregulate those items for the hotels also. Because I know that people wouldn't want to stay at Mandalay Bay if they thought there was a grungy bathroom or it was infested with bed bugs, and it doesn't take a government regulation to enforce that. They have their own enlightened self-interest keeping them having daily maid service and this sort of thing. And I just think it's ridiculous to say that private homeowners who want to rent out a bedroom to a few people visiting the Strip don't have that right. If you can't rent out bedrooms in your own home, something that that humans have been doing for almost 4,000 years, then you really have less rights than people in ancient Mesopotamia had. And that's just sad. Isn't that sad, though?
Yeah. Yeah. I have some friends that their full-time income is they drive Uber. And they were just telling me that now it's required for every single Uber driver to get their own business license. When, you know, if you wanted to take your friend across town and that friend wanted to give you $20 to give you the ride, then for you to give them that ride, why should you have to have a business license for that? Like, it's not a big deal. All it is the government taking a little hit off the top that is unnecessary. And they're looking at this going, well, maybe it's good for us because we can afford to go out there and get that. But there's a lot of other people that are poorer, that are, it's really the really poor that can't afford to go out there and get the these business licenses and jump through these hoops and pay these regulatory fees.
And it's criminal that the government charges businesses for opening. And that's what a business license is. It has nothing to do with regulations even. There's not even a pretense of what this has anything to do with, other than the government deciding who can open a business and who can't. And it's been a technique used by the government for hundreds of years to keep poor people from opening up businesses and competing against rich people. When are we going to wake up as a society and say, that's enough? The government is run by the people, not by the rich people. And I'm not saying that we need to go tax them out of prosperity. I'm not coming after their money. But they need to stop coming after our money, our middle-class money. You know, they have us bankroll their whole military while they get tax write-offs and lawyers to find loopholes. And meanwhile, the middle class is you know, doing what we can. I'm surprised they haven't stepped in to shut down things like TurboTax, Bitcoin. Every time that the market tries to find a way, the government seems like it tries to find a way to counter it and reduce it and make it ineffective, because they're, at the end of the day, not really interested in seeing people become prosperous in the world. What they're interested in is making sure that their little cadre of campaign donors can continue to do that. And if you don't believe me, then just look at all of the campaign contributions by taxi companies in 2016 and here in Nevada, and then look at all of the regulations that they tried to have passed against Uber and Lyft. And they were partially successful with the business licensing. It's absurd, and it hurts poor people, and it hurts the middle class at the expense of people who don't need to rent out bedrooms. Let's face it, if you live in a rich area of Summerlin, you likely don't need to rent out bedrooms. That's not paying for your gas money or your children to have a bite to eat. You have more disposable income. If you're a middle-class family just getting into a home, it's just you and your wife, and you got two other bedrooms with no kids on the way, I say you should be allowed to rent those out and make that extra money. So anyway, I wanted to rant too.
Well said. No, it's a good rant. It's important. You know, if you're out there listening to this and you're like, well, what could we really do to get involved? There's so much that you can do. There's so much that you can do to get involved. You could simply go out there and help spread the message. When you hear somebody say something that doesn't line up with your values, go out there and let them know what your opinion is. Create that conversation and that dialogue. Get involved with us. We would love your participation. This episode is coming out on the 27th. It's going to be out at 10 a.m. And that evening, if you're in Clark County, we have our Clark County Convention, and we would love to have you there. While you're there, come talk to us. We'll tell you how you can get involved. Go to clark.lpnevada.org and you'll see everything about that particular one. If you are outside of Clark County, let's say you're in Washoe, that's going to be the next day. So that's going to be tomorrow is the Washoe County Convention. So you can do the exact same thing. Go to the website, which is going to be washoe.lpnevada.org, and get involved. Go out there. If you don't have the time to get out there, but maybe you got a little extra jingle in your pocket, we would love the opportunity to use that to help make things a little bit better and aligned with, you know, a better economy, a more fair system. And when I say fair, what I mean by that is not necessarily fairness of outcome. What I'm talking about is fairness of opportunity to begin with. So please get out there, get involved. Until next time, make it all about freedom.
This show is brought to you by the Libertarian Party of Nevada. Music is provided by T. Sims. Please support the show by subscribing, sharing it with friends, and leaving a positive review on iTunes. For more information or to learn how to get involved, visit lpnevada.org. Thank you for listening.